We had a phone call between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, and it seems that Donald Trump was not happy with the tone, with what Putin had to say to him. Here is what he said about the phone call and the way that he perceived it.
Ukraine, are you seeing Zelensky tomorrow, and what are you hoping?
I'm speaking to President Zelensky tomorrow early in the morning, and yeah, I'm very disappointed with the conversation I had today with President Putin, because I don't think he's there. I don't think he's there, and I'm very disappointed. Well, it's not, I'm just saying, I don't think he's looking to stop, and that's too bad. This is Biden. This isn't me. This is Biden's war. It wouldn't have happened if I were president. It wouldn't have happened. So, you know, I in one way, I had to get too involved because it's Biden's war. And I got stuck in the middle of it, just like I did with immigration and a lot of other things that they screwed up. But I was not happy with the conversation, though.
Yeah. Oh, let's get out the handkerchief and dry his eyes. He's not happy. Oh, please. Look, this is... he's not telling the truth. And you know, first of all, I kept checking Truth Social. Did you see any posts on Truth Social complaining about his phone call with Vladimir Putin? I didn't.
No.
Okay, so that's tell number one, because if he was really unhappy with the phone call, he'd be blasting it out on Truth Social, you know, like what he was doing with the so-called supreme leader of Iran. You remember, you know, those guys, and, you know, unconditional surrender and all. Okay. Apparently, Putin's the one that initiated the phone call. Call him up and say, hey, want to wish you and the American people, actually, the call was yesterday, so the third, the American people, a happy 4th of July, you know, and reminded Trump of, hey, you know, Russia played played an important role in the development of America in its early days. John Quincy Adams, who later became president, he was a U.S. ambassador to Russia, to the Tsarist court, and actually he went there as a pretty young fellow. You know, when he was living in Europe the Netherlands with his father. So, you know, Putin made that point. Trump had said 10 days ago that when he talked with Putin, and Putin offered to help with Iran, and basically Trump said, I don't need your damn help. You worry about yourself. That was his message. Trump intimated that, we talked briefly, but, you know, I told him we don't need his help. I don't think that's true at all, because the Russian readout, the Russians aren't going to lie and make something up on this. And they just said that a significant amount of the time of the conversation was devoted to the situation in Iran and the Middle East. And then they talked about Syria. I'm going, I thought Syria was part of the Middle East, but okay. So they separated, but the Russians separated it out. And so they had a detailed discussion about Iran. And, you know, I imagine one of those topics is, at least from the U.S. side, how do we get Iran back in the IAEA? You know, because they've now walked away. And the U.S. wants... The U.S. and Israel demanded, you got to get back in the IA. And Iran said, no, we're not going to do it, at least for right now. So I could see one of the details is Trump talking to Putin about, you know, maybe you could help us with this. And from Putin's standpoint, he wants to make sure that the conflict is contained, because he recognizes how dangerous it is, both for Iran and for Israel. To be candid, Israel really is more at risk if this conflict, you know, if they start exchanging bombs and missiles again, because Iran, I think Iran can actually bring Israel to its knees. Israel is just not big enough to sustain an attritional war. So they talked about that. And then, you know, they talked about the war. And Putin made it, just as he did with Macron in that conversation. He said, look, we're open to negotiations. We'll talk. But the root causes of this conflict have got to be addressed. That has to be settled. Well, that means NATO's got to stop its expansion. NATO needs to stop threatening. NATO needs to stand down, back off. That's the root cause right there. Western desire to use other countries as military proxies against Russia. And so the war is going to continue. And from the, you know, the Russian standpoint, they're just, you know, they acknowledge that, you know, Trump heard what they said and what Putin said and didn't argue about it and didn't throw a tantrum and didn't make any threats. So Lord knows what he talked to Zelensky about today, because it probably has to do with will there be any future aid sent to Ukraine? The, you know, we've got some conflicting accounts. We got the announcement out of the Pentagon, a specific list of weapons, you know, 152 millimeter or 155 millimeter artillery shells, some Patriot missiles, I think even some launchers, some javelins, Hellfire, you know, a few other weapon systems. But then The Economist reported, no, it was a complete cutoff. Everything that was in the pipeline was shut down. That, you know, it could be that, you know, again, Trump's playing sort of a double game. He's pretending in his public statements, oh, I'm not happy with Russia. And boy, you know, and I'm talking to Zelensky. But behind the scenes, he said, okay, we're putting a stop to this now, because one of Putin's demands is the Western aid to Ukraine needs to stop. So Trump's already taken, you know, if you're Russia, you view this, I don't care what Trump's saying in public. I'm watching, what is he doing? They've cut off the flow. Now, some suggested that, well, and the excuse was, well, because Israel may need this. Is Israel shooting 155 millimeter artillery shells? No. There's an error. You know, they need bombs. They need Patriot missiles. So you can make the case, okay, those Patriot missiles will be diverted to Israel. Of course, it's already been proven they don't work against the Iranian ballistic missiles. But hey, but, you know, the 155 millimeter shells, they don't, and the anti-tank guided missiles. Last I checked, Hamas is not driving around in tanks. So, you know, that suspension in aid, I think, I had more to do with both sending a message to Ukraine, the war is over, as well as an acknowledgement that Western the stockpiles in the United States are way down.
It seems that they had two plans. They had two plans on to convince Donald Trump to somehow put him in a better position in terms of the way that he's dealing with Iran and with Russia. Two attacks. One on Russia. They convinced him that they would show how vulnerable Russia is and maybe weaken the position of Russia by that attack on Russian nuclear bombers and all those attacks on those terrorist attacks with drones. And then came the situation with Iran. It seems that none of these two somehow fights, somehow conflicts, put Donald Trump in a better position to deal with any of these two countries. Because the situation with Israel is the way that Donald Trump simply says, I'm not going to help Ukraine because we have something, the priority of Israel. And Netanyahu... Do you think that Netanyahu was the mastermind, or the British government was the mastermind of these two plans? They helped Israel, Larry, for such a long time. Because if that was Netanyahu, I don't see Netanyahu alone going against Russia without the participation of the United Kingdom.
But yeah, no, I think Israel has been an invisible, up until recently, an invisible supporter of the whole war against Russia. You know, the whole history, if you will, of Russian Jews, Zionism, communism, it goes back quite a ways. You know, the henchmen for Joseph Stalin during the purges that took place in 1937-38, you know, a lot of killing going on. That was headed up by a Jewish guy. And remember, you know, Stalin's battle and ultimately execution or killing of Trotsky represented, because Trotsky's, again, Jewish, had this vision of this international communist revolution. And Stalin's position, as I understand it, was he was worried about, hey, we got to take care of, we've got to get our own house together here in the Soviet Union. We can't be out stirring up, setting fires around the world. We got to put our own fires out here. And so that there was that always that tension between the Jewish radicals and the Russians. So now here's Netanyahu. You know, his country, 20-25% of it are, you know, hold Russian passports, are, you know, Russian natives, Russian speakers. But I don't think they're there because they love Russia so much. They're in Israel because they don't like Russia necessarily. So, yeah, you can come up with a motive for why Israel would be collaborating with the Ukrainians. But again, the other ultimate irony is the neo-Nazi movement in Ukraine is, and it's found, it celebrates Stefan Bandera, and Bandera, who was aligned himself with the Nazis, with the Waffen-SS, in the extermination of Jews. They also killed a bunch of Poles and others. Is now, you know, come full circle where Israel is embracing the if you call it the ideological descendants of the people who tried to destroy their parents, grandparents, great grandparents. I don't think it was until June 13th that the Russians finally woke up and realized, hey, Israel is directly involved with this, because that decapitation strike that took place on June 13th in Tehran and across Iran was very, it had similar elements, particularly how the drones were launched and going at those airfields. I think Israel has been definitely collaborating with MI6 and the United States. Let's not leave the U.S. out of this at all. The U.S. is just as complicit. And it is, you know, I think Russia now recognizes that the war with Iran, the war in Ukraine, what's going on with Azerbaijan, that it's facing a global threat from the West. The West is not letting up yet. The only thing is, the only way the West will let up is when it's been collapsed either militarily and or economically.
Here is, Larry, what Donald Trump said about Netanyahu's visit to the United States and the way he feels about the conflict in the aftermath.
Netanyahu about funding.
Oh, he's coming here. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about the great success we had. I mean, we had an incredible success in Iran. We had an incredible success, like really nobody's had in many, many years. That was a precision war strike. And the word obliteration can now be used because the Atomic Energy Commission said you can't even get into the place. It was demolished. It was really demolished. It's a great, brilliant strike. And how to go forward. We also got to talk about Gaza. So we want to get the rest. We got a lot of hostages back. But we're going to talk about guys.
Larry, how do you find the way that Donald Trump is trying to picture the situation, and how much of what he said is the reality? How much of is was some sort of desire, some sort of perception on his part?
He's a used car salesman. You know, he will. He could pick up a piece of cow manure and spray it with gold paint and tell you it was solid gold. Now it's not. And, you know, he's undergone quite a change. You know, we tracked him over the, you know, over those 12 days. You know, day number one, I know everything. I knew the minute it was going to happen. Oh, boy. Because he'd been told, this is what Iran's going to do. They're going to decapitate. This is going to cause that Islamic regime to crumble, to collapse. And Israel's going to have a tremendous victory. And then it didn't happen. Iran picked itself up off the floor. It got knocked down. And within 14 hours, they had launched ballistic missiles at Israel, and Israel couldn't stop them. And it continued. There were 22 different waves of missile attacks over 12 days. someone said they're going to have to come up with another name because it was called, they called it True Promise 3.1, True Promise 3.2, got 3.22, you know. Israel was suffering, not just suffering, it suffered severe damage. So the two ports were closed, not necessarily destroyed, but because of the missiles flying, the insurance company said, you go in there, you go at your own risk. We're not going to insure you. So that shut down maritime traffic coming into Israel. Their only international airport, Ben Gurion, shut down. Oil refineries shut down. And then with the missile, the nuclear facilities, the Department of Defense, the intelligence headquarters, their Unit 8200, all of these locations were hit. Now, we don't still have a good account of how much damage was done, but they were damaged. And then the report surfaced that, you know, Israel's running out of missiles, air defense missiles. They're going to be out in 2 weeks. And that wasn't hype. That was reality. So, and then now the reports are surfacing that Iran was prepping to mine the Straits of Hormuz. I'm still a little skeptical of that because I don't see them in a mood to want to hurt or alienate their allies in Asia. But I do think Iran was in a position to do a more selective blockade, just ships destined for Europe or the United States would be stopped. But, you know, it was in the midst of that, then that Trump goes from his, you know, jubilation the first day to, you know, within 36 hours, he goes, oh, I didn't know anything about this. I knew nothing. You know, so he went from knowing it all to knowing nothing. So, you know, he got out of it by, you know, putting on this show, you know, and they did attack Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan. I have no doubts about that. But they did construct this narrative. Oh, we obliterated it. Well, we really don't. All we can see is the surface damage, and maybe they've got some intelligence collection of conversations between workers at the site, you know, calling back home saying, man, yeah, I'm up here working. This place is, it's a wreck, you know. Maybe they have something like that, but I do know that the intelligence community concluded before the strike by the B-2s that Iran had moved the enriched uranium, and we didn't know where it was. So this is quintessential Donald Trump, that everything he does is the greatest, the biggest, the most beautiful, the most wonderful. I really find it disturbing. It's just you know, that's not normal mental functioning to talk that way. He's incapable of doing an accurate description. He's always selling. He's got to have the headlines. Read Alistair Crook's latest piece at Strategic Culture. He does a great job of explaining, taps into this author, Michael Wolff, who is in touch with a bunch of people that Trump has talked to. And Trump is always, he's a very insecure person. You think somebody with his wealth and accomplishments would be, have a lot thicker skin and not be so insecure, but very, very, very insecure, which is why he goes overboard to tell you how great he is and how wonderful he is. And everything he does is just the best and there's nothing better. You know, that's a mark of a person who inside is, has no sense of self-worth. It's pretty sad, actually.
Yeah. Here is what he said, Larry, about the attack on Iran and the response from Iran.
Just the other day, where the missiles are being shot down one after another. You know, they called me to tell me they have to take a shot at us. This was Iran, very respectful. That means they respect us. Because we dropped 14 bombs, they said we'd like to take 14 shots at you. I said, go ahead, I understand. Can you imagine? They were nice enough. This is Iran to call me and tell me that they would like to shoot me at 14 times. So they want to shoot us. And I said, go ahead. And they shot 14 high grade, very fast missiles.
Do you understand what he wants to achieve by describing this way?
Me. They called me. They're nice. They had to talk to me. It's about me. I mean, look, Trump is not the only narcissist to have ever served in the White House. I mean, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. It's like narcissist lineup. But, Trump really does take it to another level. And, instead of admitting what had actually happened was Israel was a genuine risk of losing the war to a point that the government would have collapsed, that state of Israel would have been in disarray because they could not continue to live like this. You know, at some point they were going to be run into fuel shortages and food shortages. And then, with the inability of ships to come into port and offload food, it was going to create an existential threat for Israel. Now, faced with that existential threat, then there's the possibility of the Samson option of them, wanting to use a nuke, which may have been one consideration for Iran and saying, okay, we'll agree to stop hitting you. But it was the Israelis that went to Trump and said, basically get us out of this. I mean, even Ben-Gvir admitted, Iran was a tougher target than they thought, that they didn't realize Iran had the capabilities Iran did. And my understanding is that Iran didn't use its most advanced solid fuel missiles. They used some of the older stuff. It was still quite effective at penetrating Israeli air defense. It was an appropriate ceasefire. I did have one of the readers of my blog at sonar21.com. He's a Native American converted to Shia Islam. And he wrote a pretty good explanation of sort of some of the religious thinking that went into a lot of what Iran did, and pointed out, he says, under the guidance of the Ayatollah, Iran's not going to launch preemptive strikes. They will only strike back if struck. And similarly, to avoid killing civilians as much as possible. So, Iran agreed. Once Israel stopped, Iran stopped. Now, I don't think Israel I don't think they're gonna maintain the ceasefire, I guess is the best way to say it. I think they're going to attack again. They're going to look for a pretext. And cannot rule out a false flag attack that will be blamed on Iran, that Iran had nothing to do with, that will be used as further justification for the United States to attack Israel again. but, we're going to find out that just as the United States demonstrated in the Red Sea with the Houthis, we no longer have the ability to sustain a war that's going to last more than a day or two. It's just, it's too expensive. And the logistics trail, you look at what was required to put those six B-2 bombers over Fordo, because normally when they are fully fueled, they can only carry one bomb to take off. Those GBU 57s, but they almost, the fuel tanks were almost empty. They had enough fuel to take off and fly for say 10 or 15 minutes carrying two of those bombs. And once they got airborne, then they were refueled immediately. But, the United States, if its goal was to stop the Iranian nuclear program from moving towards building a nuclear bomb, that was the goal. It failed, completely failed, because what they did was when the Israelis killed some of those top military leaders, my understanding is that some of those guys were actually the ones encouraging finding rapprochement with the West. Now there are some, let's call them the hardliners, who said, you can't trust the West. We're going to have to, we'll have to defend ourselves, and we'll be prepared to just strike them hard. So right away, you got people now in positions of decision making that are going to be much more difficult to deal with, and maybe less inclined to even engage and entertain the possibility of diplomacy or negotiation. And we don't know where the enriched uranium is. And Iran reportedly has another secret nuclear site where they can process and enrich uranium. So this, as I said all along, this was not about Iran getting a nuke. That was the excuse. This is about the regime change, because the broader plan is, we've got to do something to prevent China from becoming the global leader in economic power. That is the ultimate target. That's what's got to be stopped. To do that, we need to break Russia off from China and to weaken Russia so Russia can't come to China's aid. So we got to take Russia out first. But to get rid of Russia, we need to attack it from the south, which is why color revolution attempts in Georgia, color revolution attempts in, Azerbaijan, now working clearly, directly with Western intelligence and with the Israelis in carrying out this attack, and also causing disruption in Armenia. So the West is meddling in all of these areas, and for one reason alone, which is to ultimately set the stage for destroying China. But, Russia is one of the stepping stones in that, and Iran is one of the big chess pieces on that board.